Why was 2016 afraid of 2017?
Why is that, Mike?
Because 2017, 2018, 2019. Welcome to God. Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. Hey, it's Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is a man who hastily assembled his top 10 list 5 minutes before this started.
Mike DiCriccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing well. I have a question. Did you prepare that before you knew I was going to do that?
I did.
All right. I'm proud of you.
I was writing this out yesterday, and I thought, you know, I know Mike well enough. He will not have done this in time. Although, to be fair, you got the movies down. You just didn't rank them up until 5 minutes ago. So
I had 10 movies. I just didn't put them in order.
Right. So if you've never listened to a film bookcast before, usually we do some film news and then some discussions before reviewing whatever big release is that week. It's the end of the year, though. We're in the throes of a strange and new world known as 2017, the future year that The Running Man takes place in.
Okay.
Every time we come into a new year now, I'm going to figure out which, like, old sci-fi movie picked that year as the future. Because at this point, like you know, in the 70s and 80s, like, people would say, like, oh, 2018 will never happen. That's a future year.
Yeah. The world won't be the same.
Exactly. Actually, what's great about The Running Man is that it starts off with a a title card that reads, in 2017, the world is a vast wasteland. Oil has ravaged the world, and there's, like, no food, and everybody's dying.
And I mean, they're, like, mostly right.
Exactly. That's the thing. It was prophetic. Anyway, but we're not quite on 2017 right now. We're looking back, Mike. We're looking back. It's time for our top 10 films of 2016 episode.
I thought this was the Running Man cast episode. I signed up for the wrong class.
Oh, man. That comes later. When we do, when we finish up our Nicolas Cage Complete Works, we'll just do a podcast where we talk about the Running Man every week.
Okay.
We'll you know, like Star Wars Minute, where they do like a they do like a minute of Star Wars every episode. That's what we can do, a minute of the Running Man.
It'll be the Running Minute cast.
Oh, man, this podcast is off to a great start. And anyway, Mike and I have each selected our 10 favorite films of the year, and we're going to be going through each of them one by one. Plus, we'll be picking our top 3 TV shows of the year, and we'll be taking a look ahead at what's on the way in 2017, aside from the dystopian Running Man future. But in between segments, I'll be playing some songs from movies in 2016 that I happen to really like. Before we do any of that, though, I do want to discuss something that happened in the last days of 2016. Bring it down for a minute. The 2016 saw the death of several high-profile celebrities, many of whom were nothing less than icons, right? I mean, David Bowie, Prince, Alan Rickman, Anton Yelchin, Gene Wilder. And the film world lost a lot of major voices this year, but on December 27th, Carrie Fisher died after suffering a heart attack on a plane days earlier. And what gets worse is that her mother, Debbie Reynolds, died just a day later. Which is insane. Debbie Reynolds, I can't say I'm as familiar with Debbie Reynolds' work as Fisher's, but she was the star of Singin' in the Rain, and also the star of The Unsinkable Molly Brown. But I'll say that's incredibly sad, and I'll move on. But of all these celebrity deaths this year, I feel like Carrie Fisher's hit the closest for me. Yeah. Like, Star Wars is such a major part of my life in every facet of my being. It's a pretty major factor in my becoming a movie geek. It's been the subject of so many different conversations that I've had in my life. I feel like 25% of conversations that I have revolve around Star Wars in some way.
The other 75% is Simpsons.
Yeah. It's a good ratio, Mike. It's a good ratio. Yeah. And Leia in particular was probably the first exposure to an incredibly strong female character that I had ever had. Yeah. I mean, I was like 3 or 4 when I saw Star Wars. And having Leia there, like, even if she was the only woman in the original trilogy...
Right.
She was just as, if not more badass than everyone else in it.
Absolutely.
And so for that, I mean, like, Carrie Fisher dying was a huge blow because it was shocking. Like, nobody really expected that to happen at this point. And that's not, and also her stellar work in other movies besides Star Wars, you know, The Blues Brothers, The Burbs, when Harry Met Sally. The Burbs in particular, I actually just watched The Burbs a couple weeks before she died because I love The Burbs and, like, I was just, like, randomly flipping through channels and it was on. And it is. Yeah. It is excellent. It is so good. plus, you know, Carrie Fisher worked as a script doctor on dozens of movies throughout the 90s, including Lethal Weapon 3 and Hook and a whole bunch of other stuff. A lot of them are not great movies, but they're movies that she probably made better.
She did her best on.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I didn't know about before she passed away, was how much she was known in Hollywood as a script doctor for all those things.
Yeah, she was considered one of the best.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's crazy. Plus her one-woman show, Wishful Drinking, which I just watched the other day, because HBO did a rebroadcast of it. Mm-hmm. It's a very candid look at her entire life, her mental illness, and everything in between. I mean, Fisher was such a unique, terrific voice, and it's incredible. I just learned a couple days before she died, she was only 19 when she filmed Star Wars.
What?
Right?
Like, I had no idea.
That is insane. She carries herself so much older. There's so much like authority in Princess Leia in that first movie. It's nuts. And so that's crazy. And it's fitting that her final role will end up being Princess Leia again in Star Wars Episode 8, which is pretty nuts. So I was very sad about the death of Carrie Fisher. And just, I mean, it became a meme at a certain point that 2016 took a lot of celebrities.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be the as unfortunate as it is, I think, the new norm. Because there's that whole celebrity culture, you know, famous for being famous. Not that these people were famous for being famous, but that whole thing arose in the 60s and the late 50s. And that all those, that generation of people are all in their 80s now. Or the people that were young in the 70s had many decades of hard drug and alcohol abuse, which we know doesn't do so well for your body.
Yes, I mean, Carrie Fisher was pretty notably a party person. She partied with the Rolling Stones a lot, and she was pretty hard cocaine user and all that kind of stuff.
Right, not that that disparages anything, but that is just a symptom of, or a cause for a lot of celebrities, I think, are going to start dying a lot, which is shitty.
It's only going to get worse because the way pop culture has worked over the past 40, 50 years is that it's become a lot more divided and there's a lot more avenues for pop culture. So a lot more people have become celebrities. Like the ratio of celebrity to normal person has grown substantially over the last 50 years, right?
Yes.
Like at this point, like we have like Vine stars. Like, like those are known humans. I don't personally know any Vine stars. Like,
although the age of the Vine star has passed.
That's true.
Yeah, Vine is gone.
Vine is dead. Long live Vine. But anyway, this is all to say, R.I.P. Carrie Fisher. It was hugely devastating loss, and really just ended 2016 on a pretty bum note.
As if 2016 needed to get worse somehow. that's happened.
We lost Princess Leia. So I do want to mention that because we didn't do a podcast for the last 2 weeks. We took some time off for the holidays and stuff. So figured we'd throw this in there now, and then we can move on, Mike. Let's move on into our top 10 films of 2016.
My name is Willow B. I know the master plan. I got the sun and the stars in the palm of my hand. Carl Sagan knows the universe is eternal. I'm going to burn this down till my brain's a kernel.
Dr. Finnegan, so Epicurean, indulge in the BMOC. There's only one thing bigger than my IQ, and it stops around my knee. Let me drop a Finnegism and make a Finnegasm. Expand her universe, make a shudder and spasm. Because when you party like a savage, speak like a poet, get your chow before you even know it.
All right, it's time to count down our top 10 films of 2016. And before we get into the list, I do want to say there are movies that have come out in 2016 that we have not gotten the chance to see.
Yes.
You more so than me, although I still have a lot of movies that I haven't got the chance to see as well. But so it's not like an all-encompassing list, right? It's not like it's not these are the definitive best movies of 2016. That would be insane anyway. These are our 10 personal favorite movies that we happen to see this year. I mean, I just want to throw that out there. I haven't like movies that I think would have had a good shot at making my list that I haven't got the chance to see yet. I haven't seen Silence yet. I know you have, but I have not seen Martin Scorsese's Silence because I live in some backwards hick town where it doesn't open for a couple weeks. I haven't seen Mike Birbiglia's Don't Think Twice, although that's coming in the mail as we speak. So pretty excited about that. I haven't seen Jackie, American Honey. The Handmaiden was one I really wanted to get a chance to see and never got around to. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I haven't seen a lot of movies that, like, my top 10 could dramatically change over the next few months as I
in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, as I see more of these movies. But as of right now, this is my top 10. So, Mike, why don't you go first?
Give
me your number 10 movie of the year.
My number 10 movie is actually Silence.
Oh, well, look at that.
Yeah. Kind of a little bit of a cheat because I guess it's not out in wide release yet, but I happen to live.
It did open in 2016. You live in an area, you live in a non-backwards hick town.
Right. I live where humans are, so right. We got it. So yeah, I saw Silence last week, and it's 10 because it is beautiful. It is incredibly acted. It's Martin Scorsese doing. It's in, you know, like I had just actually watched Cape Fear like 2 or 3 days before. Okay. I saw Silence.
You haven't seen Cape Fear before?
Or I had once, maybe, or not recently at least. And it's, you know, that is Martin Scorsese doing a thriller with, you know, the classic fast camera cuts, cameras zooming in and out.
That's a very tense movie, yeah.
Yeah, hard, heavy pop music going on. There's a lot of that happening. And Silence is the opposite of that. It's very slow. There is some, you know, swooping camera moves that Scorsese does a lot.
Right.
But it is a lot of cameras in one spot, and we're just watching two hours and 45 minutes of a really intense treatise on faith and human nature and all these things. So yeah, it's number 10 for all those things. It almost justifies its 2 hours and 45 minutes. It feels a little like for a while there's like
You think it could be cut down?
I think it could probably be cut down, but I get why it is. I get why it's like that.
Okay.
But so that's number 10 for me.
Yeah, I've heard that the movie's very, it's much closer to his work, like Last Temptation of Christ and like Kundun and like, yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, he's a filmmaker that's always like very at odds with religion. I think it's going to be really, I think it'll be a very fascinating watch. I'm excited to see it whenever it comes to my hick town. but anyway, my number 10 movie of the year is 10 Cloverfield Lane. And this was actually a pretty huge toss-up. I was debating whether to put 10 Cloverfield Lane or Hell or High Water. I ended up going 10 Cloverfield Lane. Which knocked Hell or High Water into number 11, so it's out. It's gone.
Oh, man.
It'll be... I did throw in some honorable mentions at the end that I'll throw out there. I don't know if you have any as well, but I do. Anyway, so 10 Cloverfield Lane is the directorial debut of Dan Trachtenberg. We reviewed this way back in March when it came out. And it's a sort of spin-off of Cloverfield, but, like, not really. It basically takes the name Cloverfield and just kind of does something new with it. And I think the idea behind this is that they're going to do, like, a Twilight Zone-esque movie series where it's, you know, just a different kind of anthology story set, like, just with the word Cloverfield as, like, the brand name, sort of. Right. This is a very tense, tight thriller from Dan Trachtenberg. It stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead, John Goodman, John Gallagher Jr. John Goodman gives such a commanding performance in 10 Cloverfield Lane. It is insane. And there's also great work from Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Gallagher as well. I remember when we were talking about it, it just felt like every 5 minutes there was some kind of like, oh shit moment, you know? And, but each one comes pretty organically and it raises the stakes. And it's also incredibly economical storytelling. You know, we're shown, not told, a lot of information about the characters and the audience kind of trusted to come along for the ride. And so, for that reason, 10 Cloverfield Lane makes the list. It's really an excellent thriller. I do plan on, getting it soon. I've been itching to watch it again for a long time. So that's 10 Cloverfield Lane. Mike, what is your number 9 movie of the year?
My number 9 is actually 10 Cloverfield Lane.
What?
So, all the things you just said, again.
Nice, nice. Do you have anything to add beyond that?
I am excited, not specifically, I guess, about 10 Cloverfield Lane, but that idea of the Cloverfield anthology being this kind of Twilight Zone style, loosely connected thriller series.
Yes.
That idea is really exciting for me.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And the way they've been doing it so far, I mean, they've only done the 2 Cloverfield movies, both of which were like taking a chance on first-time directors. And I think that's kind of the way they're going to keep going. I hope, anyway. I know there's another movie coming out from Bad Robot called God Particle, which is coming out in 2017. Mm-hmm. And the rumor is that that might end up being a Cloverfield movie as well.
Yeah, because that's what they did with this one. It was Valencia for 2 years or whatever.
Right.
And then...
Two months before release, they decided to announce that it was a Cloverfield movie, and everybody's like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully they get more of that. And I agree, John Goodman, it's award-worthy what he does, that movie.
He will not be recognized for awards for this movie, but he absolutely should be.
Yeah.
So that's 10 Cloverfield Lane again. and my number 9 movie of the year is The Neon Demon, which is the new movie from Nicholas Winding Refn, who's a director who I really, really love. But he's also so divisive. Like he's the kind of director who, like, you can watch one of his movies and that you'll either love it or you're going to hate it. And if any director is carrying the torch left by Stanley Kubrick right now, I think it's Nicholas Winding Refn. This is a satire horror film based on the modeling industry, and it's very strange, it's funny, and it's visually just astonishing. Every frame of this movie would make a great poster on your dorm room wall. You know, it's a very divisive movie, but if you're on its wavelength and you don't mind having conversations being interrupted by metaphorical cougars, there's a lot to unpack here. And Elle Fanning is really great in the lead role, and it's got a really good ensemble cast. Has one of the I forget her name. It has one of the wives from Mad Max Fury Road as one of the models, and it has Keanu Reeves as well.
What more do you need?
Exactly. It's a really, really strong movie from Nicholas Winding Refn. And his last movie, Only God Forgives, was actually my number one movie of that year. And I feel like that, I've come down a little bit on that. It's kind of a little lower on my list now. But when I saw that, I was blown away. This movie has a very similar visual palette to Only God Forgives. Which, have you seen Only God Forgives by any chance?
I have, yeah.
Okay, yeah. If you've seen Only God Forgives, I feel like you know which... I do think this is better than that movie. Okay. So I think that... It takes that visual palette and has a more coherent story attached to it. And
there is a story then.
Yeah, I loved Only God Forgives too, but this one has like a narrative that you can follow, whereas Only God Forgives was Ryan Gosling getting in fights for 90 minutes, right?
Yep.
So that is the Neon Demon. I really, really loved that. Mike, what is your number 8 movie of the year?
Yeah, well, I just want to say Neon Demon's one of my movies that if I had seen it, it would probably be on my list for this year.
Okay.
But I hadn't got a chance to see it. That said, my number 8 movie is The Witch.
Ooh, yeah.
Just a movie that I don't think I had heard of until you said we were going to review it. I went in totally blind and had no idea what to expect and got the pants scared off me. It was incredible. it is just a... What is the subtitle? A New England folktale?
Yes.
And it's just a dark, old English witch hunty kind of exercise in faith and superstition, I guess, is my theme for this year.
Yeah, Silence and the Witch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a. Yeah, I really love The Witch, too. That was a really great movie. That actually will appear on my list later on.
Ooh.
A little hint at what's to come. but yeah, so you really love The Witch. Like, it's as far as horror movie goes, as far as horror movies go, did you think this was like one of the best ones this year? Like, did you think that was the horror movie to beat?
Well, I guess it depends on how you define horror, because I got another one that's higher up on my list.
Ooh,
But so far, yeah, that movie was The Witch. I just love everything surrounding it, that like the church, Satanism, and like all that real world, like the Church of Satan or whatever it's called,
right.
Like picked it as a rallying cry for their movie, for their cause this year, and like all this silliness.
Yeah, there's a lot of craziness going on with The Witch, and it's also, I think, a very divisive movie too. Much like the Neon Demon, but this is mostly because it's very slow and it's very hard to understand for a lot of it. Like,
yeah,
just the dialogue.
Written, deliberately written in a old-fashioned. Circuitous language, and it's just good.
Yeah.
People should see it if they haven't.
People should see it, and we reviewed that movie a while back too.
In February, I think it came out.
Yeah, if people want to check that one out as well. And my number 8 movie of the year is Sing Street, which is the new movie from director John Carney, who is the director of Once. He also directed the movie Begin Again. This is probably the most like straight up feel good movie of the year. It's about a kid in Ireland in the 80s who decides to start a band to impress an older girl. The movie's got a great soundtrack of original songs and the songs that inspire those original songs. And you get a sense of the band finding itself as it figures out what music it likes to play. I love musicals. I'm a big fan. 2016 has been a phenomenal year for musicals between Sing Street, La La Land, Moana, and Popstar. I'm counting Popstar. I think that counts. and I also love movies about kids in high school. So this is like the best of both worlds. This was a slam dunk for me. And special praise goes to Jack Rayner as the main character's brother. I mean, their relationship is the backbone of this movie. And to anyone who has a brother, I think it hits pretty close to home as well. So Sing Street, really, really phenomenal movie. Just a great time to watch. Also, Baelish is in this movie. Aidan Gillen, I just remembered that. Peter Baelish from Game of Thrones. So there's that as well. Anyway, Mike, what is your number 7 movie of the year?
My number 7 movie is Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Ooh, Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
I feel like we just did an episode on it, so I don't think I need to
that's true.
Go in depth. People probably know about it, know what I think.
People are probably familiar with this little known space franchise called Star Wars.
Yeah, the space movie called Star Wars. I've loved it. I had so much fun watching it. It's exciting. It renewed a lot of stuff about why I love Star Wars. So it's on my top 10.
Yeah, that's cool. I've seen Rogue One twice now. And I liked it quite a bit. It did not make my top 10, but it is a very good movie, and I highly recommend people check it out. Do you like Rogue One more than Force Awakens, or do you like Force Awakens more? I'm just curious.
I think I put Rogue One above Force Awakens.
Okay, interesting.
Just because it benefits a lot from not having to set up and be beholden so much to other movies.
Okay.
I mean, it is very much beholden to the rest, the franchise as we know it so far, but it doesn't have to go through the pains of introducing and holding up three other movies for it.
Right. Very cool. And my number 7 movie of the year is Everybody Wants Some, which is the new movie directed by Richard Linklater. And this is the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused. And it may even be better than Dazed and Confused. I might throw that out there. I'd have to watch them both several more times to make that call. But I was rewatching this the other day because I got it for Blu-ray on Christmas. And I was struck by how authentic this film feels to the college experience. And even to someone who did not go to college in the 80s and was decidedly very unathletic. The guys in this movie feel like people that I know or I knew in college. And nearly every scene in this movie contains something that I experienced or watched happen while I was at college. And it was almost scary. Like, it was almost terrifying to a point. But it's also a movie that seems to be aware of how fleeting that moment is. And Linklater is a filmmaker who is obsessed with moments. And many of his recent films, like Before Midnight and Boyhood, are about the passage of time. Everybody Wants Some takes that idea and does great things with it. And it's also just hilarious throughout. There is one of the most joyful scenes of any movie I've seen this year. It's like a minute and a half long. Of 5 of the main characters just driving in a car and singing Rapper's Delight. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. Anyway, so that is Everybody Wants Some. Highly recommended. I loved it. Anyway, what is your number 6 movie of the year, Mike?
My number 6, we've entered my Mike didn't see that many movies section. Number 6 is Captain America Civil War.
Okay.
we both know how much we love, or I love me some Marvel movies.
Yeah, I also love me some Marvel movies.
Civil War is one of those things that is just it's the thing we love about all the Marvel movies. We're watching Captain America and Ant-Man and Falcon just like hanging out and like doing stuff together. Right. And it's the joy, the silliness, the lightheartedness of the Marvel movies that is diametrically opposed to the Snyderverse. That if there was ever a year that was just evidence that this is the Snyderverse, it was 2016, by the
way. Yes, yeah, absolutely. And I think part of my list does reflect that a lot of the movies that I picked are movies that are just purely enjoyable and fun, right? And like like gave me a little bit of escapism from the horror that is our life.
The glimmer of light in the Snyderverse.
Yeah. But yes, you can keep going. Captain America Civil War.
Oh, well, that's kind of just that. It's just so much fun. I mean, we reviewed it too. It's another one of the a lot of these we reviewed. But it makes me excited for the future of the Marvel stuff. Like Spider-Man's coming out in July, I think, or August of 2017.
Yep, Spider-Man's in July. Guardians of the Galaxy in May. We got a lot of Marvel stuff to look forward to.
Yeah,
I really love Civil War as well. It almost made my top 10. It did not. It did not make the cut. But it is a just fantastic Marvel movie. I think one of their best. I don't think it's as good as Winter Soldier, which I think is like the cream of the crop, best Marvel Cinematic Universe movie and one of the best superhero movies ever. But I think Civil War has so much fun with its premise, but also takes a more serious look at its themes than a lot of previous Marvel movies have. It's like, there's a lot of weight behind the story, even though at the same time you're watching, Spider-Man and Ant-Man go toe-to-toe, and Ant-Man's right. A giant Spider-Man is taking him down like an AT-AT, and it's,
Yeah, it just got put up on Netflix, actually, Civil War, so I just rewatched it. And that scene with Black Panther and Zemo. Baron Zemo, when they're talking about, the living with your sins and all that stuff, that scene hit home real hard again.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see their Marvel's take on those things, you know, the consequences of them fighting in cities all the time and all that stuff, and actually be good at that.
Yeah.
Well, that's my number six.
Okay, that is your number six. And my number six is a movie called Hunt for the Wilder People, which is the new movie from director Taika Waititi, who's actually making a Marvel movie next year, Thor Ragnarok. And he also directed What We Do in the Shadows. And I've been talking about this guy all year, I feel like. He is one of the this is one of the charming oddball movies on my list. I have a couple. And this is one of the most purely enjoyable movies I saw this year. I think Waititi has this very kind of dry humor, which is somehow outrageous at the same time. And it leaves me in stitches. I think we're just on the same wavelength, humor-wise. And Wilder People centers on a boy and his foster parent, played by Sam Neill, as they go to live in the forests of New Zealand and set off a nationwide manhunt. And this movie is very funny, and it's amazingly heartfelt. I think Waititi taps into some real emotion with these two characters. And Sam Neill gives one of the year's best performances, too. And there's, you know, just so many moments that I've been thinking about since I watched the movie. There's this one moment where the kid fires a shotgun and then shouts, "Shit just got real," but he is cocking the gun at every word, so it's like, "Shit just got real," and it's and I've been thinking about it for months since I've watched that movie. So Hunt for the Wilder People, really fantastic, very funny movie, really heartfelt and emotional, and very, very good. Mike, what is your number five movie of the year?
Hunt for the Wilder People is another one of those movies that if I had seen would probably be on my list. But instead, Doctor Strange is my number five.
Okay. Double Marvel.
Double there. Marvel, back to back. All Disney, all the way, apparently, I guess. Yeah, this is, like I said when we reviewed it, it's one of those movies that is goes to the extreme with its premise and goes there with reckless abandon, and I applaud that greatly. It takes hard sci-fi, weird, crazy concepts, and we're just going. We're gonna go there. This is a big budget box office movie.
Right.
Suck my dick if you don't like it. Like it's amazing. I love the balls on Doctor Strange, and
And
it does beautiful, trippy sci-fi stuff.
It does. Yeah. I also really, really enjoyed Doctor Strange. I think it's a blast. I think it starts off a little formulaic, and like it kind of sticks with the Marvel formula, but it also expands and does its own thing. And visually, I think it's one of the most audacious blockbusters in recent years. It's pretty nuts to watch, like just to see all the stuff happening. It has like this really subversive climax, and it's a really great movie, and it has a lot of fun stuff going on. So that is Doctor Strange. Did not make my top 10 either, but you know, it came kind of close. Not as close as Civil War, but it came close. my number five movie of the year is Kubo and the Two Strings, which is the new movie from Leica Animation, directed by Travis Knight, who's the CEO of Leica, although it's his first movie as a director. Leica is the best animation studio working today. It is insane how good their stuff is, and the craft of this movie is just amazing. I mean, it's a blend of stop motion and CGI, mostly stop motion, and it's unreal, and it results in probably... I just said Doctor Strange is visually audacious. I think Kubo, Kubo is the most visually audacious movie of the year, maybe besides The Neon Demon. It is a...
Sorry, that was really funny.
It's a traditional hero story, but it's told so effectively with such memorable characters and amazing set pieces. And it's a movie that's not afraid to be quiet for long stretches either. The opening... there's like this big opening prologue scene, and then after that, there is like five straight minutes of just silence. It's like a silent thing. Yeah, and it's incredible, and it trusts its audience, and it like lets like it's obviously not for very little kids, but I think it's like it knows that older kids can kind of handle certain things. And when the movie begins, Kubo tells the audience, "If you must blink, do it now." And from then, I was mesmerized. I loved Kubo and the Two Strings. It is insanely good. I loved it, and that is my number five pick for the year. Mike, what is your number four?
Kubo's another one of the movies that if I had seen, would have been on my list. But number four for me is Hell or High Water.
Okay, Hell or High Water.
Yeah, pretty high up on my list. This is a just down and dirty kind of almost heistish movie. There's some, you know, cat and mouse going on there with between Chris Pine and Jeff Bridges, which is a lot of fun. Yes. But it really is a character study about living in a depressed rural town, having to deal with money issues and what lengths you're willing to go to for family. And all that stuff really struck a chord with me. And I loved all of it. I don't remember the writer's name, but he also wrote Sicario.
Yes, he did. I think it's like Scott McKenzie or something like that.
Something along those lines. So yeah. He's somebody I'm going to be keeping an eye out on because I love Sicario and Hell or High Water.
Yes. Yeah. I also really liked Hell or High Water. Again, it almost made my list. It was number 11. But it's great. And it's also, it feels very like Westernish. It's like a modern day Western. Before I went to go see Hell or High Water, I assumed it was a Western.
I mean, you're not wrong.
The opening shot of the movie is them driving a car, and I was like, wait a minute, am I in the right theater? So that is Hell or High Water. It's a great movie too. So definitely check that out if you have not seen it. My number four of the year is The Witch. Look at that. Directed by Robert Eggers. It's the best horror movie of the year, I think, and also the one that I probably would not recommend to that many people. Just because it's very slow, very difficult to understand. But if you stick with it, get on its wavelength, you are rewarded with such an atmospheric, haunting experience. There are sequences in this movie that are burned into my memory. Specifically, Caleb's big possession scene in the barn after he's found in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit, man. Yeah. And, like, the performances they get out of these kids.
They're, like, 13 or 14. Yeah, it's crazy.
The twins are, like, 5 or 6.
Yeah.
But Caleb's performance there is like it's insane. And I mean that ending, like damn. So
I mean that whole I would like to live deliciously has become like a thing for a lot of people. amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So that is The Witch. Obviously we already talked about it, so I won't spend too much time on that. Mike, what is your number 3 movie of the year?
My number 3 movie, this is the one that depends on your definition of horror, is Green Room.
Okay. You can throw that in as a horror. It's like a thriller, horror thriller.
I put it more in the thriller category, thriller suspense category. But I guess it could be horror in some way.
Yeah.
It is a small indie movie written and directed by Jeremy Saulnier, who also did Blue Ruin, which came out, I think, in 2014, maybe?
2013, 2014,
somewhere around there. And it's the most simple, straight-ahead story of a punk band plays a show at a skinhead bar and shit goes wrong that's it. We're there for an hour and a half in that moment, and it is made the loss of Anton Yelchin that much more devastating because he delivers an amazing performance in this.
Yes.
And everyone that's in it, there's Imogen Poots is in it,
Ally Shawkat from
Arrested Development, she's in it,
yeah, and of course Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart is in it, which is amazing that he's in this playing a skinhead, that it's awesome. Incredibly tense, incredible bursts of graphic ultraviolence, and not in the stylized way, like Kingsman, it's kind of silly.
Right.
This is like realistic, graphic, limbs hanging off.
Yeah, there is some gross shit happening in Green Room.
Yeah, yeah. And it also has Macon Blair, who starred in Blue Ruin. Yes. Is Jeremy Saulnier's like hometown friend or something like that, and he's writing and directing a new movie this year called I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, and I want to check that out because Macon Blair is awesome in Green Room and Blue Ruin. So these are more lesser known guys that I'm excited to follow more of. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Green Room. I saw Green Room a while back and I liked it. I remember thinking I liked it. I was also exhausted when I watched it. Like I was so tired.
Yeah.
So I would like to give it another shot because I remember thinking it was like pretty good, but I don't see what all like the fuss is about. Because people went nuts for Green Room. People were like all over it.
They did.
And so I remember watching it and being like, this is pretty good. But I was also operating on very little sleep. So I would like to give it another shot at some point in the near future. So that's why I did not make my top 10. But hey, I'm glad I made yours. It is a very well-made and very well-done movie. My number 3 movie of the year is Swiss Army Man. Which is the new movie by Daniels, which is Daniel Scheinart and Daniel Kwan. It just says a movie by Daniels in the credits. This is the most life-affirming film of the year, and it's the one where Daniel Radcliffe plays a farting corpse with a boner.
But is there anything more human than that?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. The pure joy on display in Swiss Army Man is such a sight to behold. Its total commitment to its insane premise is a testament to the idea that anything can work if you try hard enough. And this movie made me laugh a lot. It has a very oddball soundtrack that is often performed by Dano and Radcliffe themselves. which is pretty wild. They do like an acapella version of the Jurassic Park theme, which is like,
oh my god,
aces. And it's got a pretty insane ending that leaves a lot up to debate about whether you what you think happened. And Swiss Army Man, man, it's just really great. And Paul Dano is really good in it. Like, Paul Dano is an actor who I feel like is always on the cusp of things that are great.
Yeah,
like he's always in really great movies, but I feel like he always, like, he never gets the credit for being in those movies. Yep. You know, like, he's the guy in There Will Be Blood who is not Daniel Day Lewis.
Exactly what I was just going to say. Yeah.
You know, he's the guy in Love and Mercy who's not John Cusack. He's the guy who's in, you know, Meek's Cutoff, who is in the background. And, like, he's in a bunch of, like, really great stuff. But he's never, like, he's very rarely the star of something. So that, and he does a great job here. But at the same time, he's the guy in Swiss Army Man who's not Daniel Radcliffe, who... who is definitely giving, I think, the more challenging performance here. And you wouldn't think so, because he's playing a corpse. But he's actually, like, he changes, like, his entire body chemistry and, like, everything about it. And it's very different than what he did as, like, Harry Potter, you know.
Right.
And that's something that's, I feel like the Harry Potter trio of actors, Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, and Rupert Grint. I think Emma Watson has broken out the best since she's been able to get into other stuff. Daniel Radcliffe, I feel like, can't really do a ton in mainstream movies without people being like, hey, he's Harry Potter. So he's kind of, like, receded into the world of indie filmmaking. And he's been doing a really, like, interesting job, like, a lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the amount of money that they have from Harry Potter has been freeing for Daniel Radcliffe in some way. Because he's just like, fuck it, I'm going to make horns.
Like, exactly. Yeah, he's an actor who, like, even while Harry Potter's going on, he was trying to do different, like, avenues. Remember, he was in Equus? And it was, right. It was a big deal that, like, Harry Potter was naked in a play. Like, you could see Daniel Radcliffe's wiener.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
But anyway, yeah, so that is Swiss Army Man. It is great. Mike, we're on number two. We're almost at the end of the top ten
number
list.
Number two. My number two for 2016 is The Nice Guys.
So is mine.
No way.
What? Look at that. Man, we can just talk about it together then.
Let's do a review at the same time. Okay.
All right, you go first. You go first.
Well, Nice Guys is, oh man, I just blanked on everything because I'm so excited that it's the same movie for us.
You got
stars Ryan Gosling, Russell Crowe. They play back, you know, private detectives that come together by accident.
Yes.
Just absolute shenanigans all the way through. And it's one of the, from the very first, man, like 2 minutes when Ryan Gosling is like, We're in this, and he's going to break into this room, and he punches the window out of a door and slits his wrist open and almost bleeds out. And it's sets the tone for the rest of the movie that is just exquisite. It's so much fun. This is the kind of movie that I'm, you know, the Rogue Ones and the Civil Wars are here to hold up the tent pole to fund these other movies like The Nice Guys. So I'm glad those movies exist, so that we could have movies like The Nice Guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is obviously directed by Shane Black, who is the director of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Iron Man 3. He wrote Lethal Weapon, Long Kiss Goodnight, a whole bunch of great stuff. And when we recorded our episode last year and looked ahead to 2016, I said that I would be shocked if The Nice Guys wasn't my number one film of the year.
Right.
And it came very close. It actually was my number one up until I saw the movie that I saw a few days ago and it ended up supplanting it. Shane Black is one of the best writers in the business, and I love watching his films subvert the cliches that he himself kind of helped create.
Right.
And The Nice Guys is a terrific buddy cop action comedy. Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe are the funniest they've ever been. And it's not like Russell Crowe is that funny in most other things. But still, like, he's great in this movie. He's like, they make such a good pair together. And the mystery is very engaging. Anne Gorey Rice, as Gosling's daughter, is probably the biggest find of the year. Her and Caleb from The Witch. And there are like 10 to 15 sequences in this movie that I've been thinking about nonstop since I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that I quote, and I've only seen it the one time. It's actually a movie that I also got on Blu-ray recently, and I'll be watching again soon. But it's a movie that I feel like I'll be rewatching a whole lot. Like, I just really, really enjoyed it. And you can watch, and you can listen to our review of The Nice Guys.
Look at that.
If you're so inclined, if you go back into the archives. All right, Mike, we're at our number ones. We're at the number one movie
number
of the year.
Number one. Number one movie of the year.
All right, man. Give me your number one. Drum roll, please.
My number one is Arrival.
Arrival! All right. Cool.
Yes. This is a another hard sci-fi movie that, in your words, what did you say for Swiss Army Man? Is the most life-affirming movie of the year?
Yeah, definitely. Arrival is definitely up for that title as well, I imagine.
Yeah. I did not see Swiss Army Man, so that probably another one that would have been on my list if I had seen it.
Well, you can't just say they would all be on your list. We have somewhat different tastes. That's the idea of this thing. We got different opinions. We clash all the time. True. We don't clash all the time.
Quote unquote all the time.
Our clash consists of me liking an M. Night Shyamalan movie more than you did.
That's pretty much. I think in all of our reviews this year.
The Visit was our most divisive.
Yeah, in like January 20th. Anyway.
You know what? Speaking of, Split is coming out very soon. And I think we should review it.
Oh, man. Okay. So, anyway.
Getting off track. Talk about Arrival. Yeah.
Yeah, Arrival is a movie that aliens arrive on Earth and we follow a linguist who's trying to decipher their language, and it's about that only the top level. There's right. So much going on with this movie that it calls into human nature, questions human nature about if you knew all the bad things that are going to happen in your life, would you still live your life? And it's. The conclusion it comes to sort of is that life is worth living no matter what. And that's what makes us human, is that we go through all these ups and downs and we're in it together as a species, as a human community. And it's, you know, at a time I saw this, I think right before or after the election, I don't remember, at a time when we seemed to be at our most divided, this kind of movie and story and message is something that I needed, very personally. And it worked. It was good. Maybe see the light at the end of the tunnel for this. So that's why it's number one.
Yeah, I also liked Arrival quite a bit. It did not make my list, but it is a really, really strong sci-fi movie from Denis Villeneuve, who is one of the most interesting directors working today. Yes. And who is also directing the upcoming sequel to Blade Runner, Blade Runner 2049, which have you seen the trailer for that, by the way?
I did see the trailer for it, yes.
Looks pretty good.
I'm pumped. There's our boy, Ryan Gosling, again.
Yeah, he's the man. And actually, you might be seeing him again in my number one pick. My number one pick of the year is Shrek 5.
Oh, man. You can't steal my bit.
We haven't done the bit in so long. I feel
like. I have it written down for my 2017. Look forward to. Oh, man. You stole it. You beat me to it.
That's amazing. Anyway, speaking of Ryan Gosling, my number one movie of the year is La La Land. So he's in my top two movies of the year. The Nice Guys in La La Land. This is the new movie from director Damien Chazelle. He was the director of Whiplash, and he's also the writer of the excellent movie Grand Piano. Did you ever see that?
No, that's the Elijah Wood movie, right?
That is the movie where it's Elijah Wood plays a concert pianist. And he's doing his comeback show 5 years out of the game. He's back, but then it's a situation where John Cusack plays a sniper, and if Elijah Wood plays one wrong note, he will die. It is
amazing.
It is amazing. It is the modern day version of Speed, and it's great. but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about La La Land. I had such a big goofy smile on my face from just the opening frames of La La Land, which starts in a letterboxed black and white. Before expanding the frame, bringing in color, and revealing that the movie was filmed on Glorious CinemaScope. And that goofy smile never faded, even in the movie's most melancholy moments, and it gets kind of melancholy towards the end. Between La La Land, Whiplash, and Grand Piano, I don't think anybody's doing more for music on movies than Damien Chazelle. And this is so heavily indebted to classic musicals of the 50s and 60s, while still very much blazing its own trail. La La Land, I think, is a triumph. You know, it's there's just like a simple charm of seeing tap dancing in a modern movie musical. I never thought I would see that again.
Who knew?
Yeah, and then there's the big, bold jazz numbers. There's the emotional audition scene. And, oh, man, there's a musical recreation of the planetarium scene from Rebel Without a Cause.
Wow.
That is just insane. It's gorgeous. It builds on the past. It builds on, like, Hollywood past to make something very decidedly modern. And nothing this year has made me feel as good. And like I said before, a lot of these movies ended up just being happy escapes from the horrifying Snyderverse that we find ourselves in today. So I love La La Land. It was great. And again, Nice Guys was my number one for most of the year. And then like I saw La La Land like a week ago, and I don't know if it will remain at number one. You know, I don't know if the charm will fade at some point, but it is just such a like dynamically filmed and like really fun movie. Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling are fantastic. Most of the musical numbers are done in one take. Really? And there's like a lot of elaborate like dance and stuff there. The opening number is insane, and there's just so much cool stuff going on. So La La Land is my number one. It's amazing. It's awesome, and I highly recommend people check it out. Again, 2016, great year for musicals. It's just a really great cinematic year for musicals. The musicals making a big comeback, man. Hamilton has opened the door.
I mean, you're probably not wrong in that those two things are linked.
Yeah, it's possible.
But yeah, I think we might be able to make a safe prediction that a pretty life-affirming, joyous movie about movies probably got a good shot for the Oscar.
Yeah, I saw a lot of comparisons between this and The Artist.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking.
Which I think this is a much better movie than The Artist was. And I thought The Artist was fine. Like, I enjoyed The Artist. But this, The Artist feels like it was so much looking back towards the past.
Right.
But that's all it was. Like, it just felt like nostalgic for the silent movies of the 20s. La La Land is looking back at the past, but it's using that to build something new and revolutionary. And that's actually part of the themes of the movie. It's
right.
How do you become a revolutionary if you're so stuck in tradition? And that's kind of what La La Land is all about. And so I think this is a very worthy movie for the Oscars this year if it ends up being the big winner. I think it's going to be down to La La Land, Moonlight, and Manchester by the Sea. I've seen both of those movies as well, and they're both really good. They're not movies that made my top 10, but they are really, really good movies, and I highly recommend people check those out. But of the three, I would pick La La Land as my number one. Although I think... La La Land is positioned to be the best picture winner just based on its subject matter. I do think Manchester by the Sea is a pretty fantastic triumph of just like screenwriting and a great lead performance by Casey Affleck. And also Moonlight is really strong, really interesting. It would also help out the Oscars diversity problem, which they need to fix. But also, it's so indie, like it's so small. Like, I feel like it's such an indie movie that it might not get as much recognition at the Oscars, which is such, like, a big kind of event.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But you never know. Beast of the Southern Wild got nominated for the Oscar back. So.
Yeah, that's true. Stay tuned.
Anything can happen. We'll find out probably soon, I would imagine, when the Oscar nomination's got to be announced pretty
I would
soon.
Think soon, yeah.
Anyway, so, and I also do want to throw out, I have a couple of honorable mentions for my top 10. Like I said, Hell or High Water almost made the list. Captain America Civil War almost made the list. Hail Caesar. Very, very close to making the list, the new Coen Brothers movie. Really excellent. Did you get a chance to watch that yet?
No. I was going through – there was a lot of movies when I was going through the list of things that came out this year that was like, nope, should have seen that. Should have seen that.
Hail Caesar, very close to making the list. The Edge of 17, which I talked about a little while ago, was a really great high school movie starring Hailee Steinfeld that I wanted to throw in there. And also Popstar. very, very close. I think one of the funniest movies of the year. And, Lonely – like it's so underappreciated. The mainstream audience did not get a hold of it, but it's found cult success, and that's the best kind of success.
That's right.
I would say
the success that matters because you're a part of it.
Exactly. I can say that I've listened to the Popstar soundtrack conservatively hundreds of times. so there's that. In any case, that's it for our top 10 movies of the year. That is exciting. Congratulations, we made it, Ma. La La Land, Arrival. The two best movies of the year, objectively speaking.
Yeah, you can count on it.
Yeah, so that is our top 10. And I'll mention as the weeks and months go on, if I see a movie that I think will probably like supplant something in my top 10, I'll throw it out there. Like, hey, my top 10 changed. Maybe not. Maybe not. Nobody cares.
I know Colin might care. Colin, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks, Colin. Much appreciated. I hope you're keeping very detailed notes in all of our top 10s.
Yeah, there'll be a quiz.
Yeah. That's it for our top 10 movies of the year. Let's move on into our top 3 TV shows of the year, starting right now. About that day, I left him at a Greyhound station west of Santa Fe. We were 17, but he was sweet and it was true. Still, I knew what I had to do. All right, Mike, let's get into our top 3 TV shows of the year. Now, we didn't do 10 because that's a lot of work.
Nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that. We did 10 movies, and that was enough work as it was. We just talked about it for like an hour. So we figured just throw out some TV shows, our top 3 shows. So, Mike, give me your number 3 TV show of the year.
My number three TV show is The Night Of.
Okay, very cool. I like The Night Of a lot as well, but tell me what you liked about it.
I think it kind of fell off in the last two episodes, but I think the things it's doing to subvert so many expectations in the earlier part of the season is super interesting. We always, I can't think of an exact example, but a lot of times when the police show up to crime scenes, they're the ones with the bumping bass music, with, you know, really loud things that we are usually associated for, you know, the street thug type of character, but right. It's given to the cops. We're shown the kind of seedy underbelly of the justice system and how frankly broken it is for right. So many things. We turn non-criminals maybe into hardened drug addicts and hardened criminals. And it was just a really interesting deep dive into that world and culture. I don't know if we ever found out what the feet thing was, but,
Yeah, no, I really liked The Night Of as well. I thought it was a very good show. I ultimately liked the final episode. I thought there was a lot of really compelling stuff there. The scene where Riz Ahmed's character is being questioned by the opposing attorney is like really compelling and good stuff.
Yeah,
and John Turturro has like his big lawyer's his Emmy speech, basically. Right. And you know, there's a lot of good stuff there. And I like the show a lot. I do think it never quite lives up to the promise of its pilot, which the pilot was. Right. So good, like it was ridiculously good, and you know, after that, it kind of just becomes the story about the jail cell, like what life is like on the inside and jail and stuff, and like that's something we've seen before and other stuff that has done that kind of story better. But there's still a lot of really good stuff there. But yeah, that was a very good show, and I think a very good pick for your top 10. My number three show of the year is another HBO drama, Game of Thrones.
Look at that.
Yeah, there we go. So season 6 of Game of Thrones aired this year, and it ended up being one of the show's best seasons. It went off book this year, which is a new thing for the show, which allowed the series to amp up the momentum. Every episode felt exciting because of it. Every character felt like they were going places, and it was just visually astounding and just really phenomenal show. Like Game of Thrones has always been a great show. Like I've always really enjoyed the show. But there have been times where like I am not totally on board with what's going on. There are like kind of off seasons. I remember season 5, actually the last season, just felt like it was kind of wheel spinning and like there wasn't much going on. I know that one's based on the book that nobody likes. So the fact that it was able to go off book because the books don't exist at this point anymore. There's no books for them to go off of. It gave the show a lot more creative freedom, I think. And I think I want to give special mention to the episode Hold the Door, which sends off a fan favorite character in such heartbreaking fashion.
Insane. Absolutely insane.
While at the same time changing our entire perception of what the show is capable of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it is insane for that. And no show has like battle sequences on TV that is quite like what Game of Thrones does. The Battle of the Bastards was like some of the most epic TV I've seen this year. It was insane. It was crazy to watch. Really loved it. So that's Game of Thrones, my number three pick. Mike, what is your number two?
Oh man. You know what? I think I'm going to call an audible because I totally forgot that Game of Thrones season 6 aired in 2016. Fuck off, Night Of. You're number four now. With Game of Thrones.
Boom.
I forgot that happened. My number two show though is Westworld. Westworld, okay. My number two pick.
I'm surprised. I thought Westworld was going to be your number one, actually.
There's one that you're going to disagree with, probably, for my number number one. But we just did a whole episode on Westworld recently, but it's the same. You're noticing a trend in my sci-fi horror things going on here. Probably a lot of my picks for these movies.
Spell out the trend, yeah. Yeah. For the listeners at home.
Yeah, who weren't here. Well, I mean, we've got Cloverfield, The Witch, Green Room, Arrival. Then we've got Westworld now, and my next pick is going to be in the same vein.
Okay.
But yeah, Westworld, I thought, was another incredible HBO show that we are able to, like I said with Doctor Strange, like, fuck you, if you don't follow along, we're going there anyway.
Right.
But Westworld does that in the HBO version that can actually say all those things.
Yes, absolutely.
That is just a really crazy, mind-bendy examination of reality and what is, you know, have you ever questioned the nature of your reality is the, like, tagline of the whole show.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I really loved Westworld. It's it did not make my list, but it is a very good movie. It actually made my TV show, I mean, and probably a movie.
It might as well.
But yeah, it did make my honorable mentions. There's a lot of great stuff there. There's a lot of great performances and a lot of great stuff. And if you want to hear more about Westworld, we recorded an episode two episodes ago. Then it was a great episode, one might say. I'll say it. I'm proud of our Westworld episode. Anyway, my number two of the year is Atlanta, which is the new series created by Donald Glover, which is airing on FX. And this show hit the ground running and never let up. Each episode feels unique and inspired. Donald Glover, I think, is one of the most talented artists working today. And this show is both very funny and often very real. And it's pretty tough to pick a standout episode of the show. But I would say around the time it hits like episode four or five, like every episode is like instant classic status. Like it's actually like insane how good it is. And of all of them, I think the episode that made me really see the potential for the show is episode six, which is called Value, which shifts the focus mostly to Glover's sometimes girlfriend Van, that character, as she catches up with a friend and then has to try and pass a drug test. And the opening scene of this episode is just her and her friend at a restaurant talking for literally 10 minutes, like 10 full minutes. Of just that. And it's really, like, interesting, and you get such a complete review of their relationship that it's insane. And then as the episode goes on, the next day she has to try to pass a drug test after having smoked a joint the night before, and it ends up with this Breaking Bad-style cook montage where she is trying to soak the urine out of her baby's diapers so that she can use it on her drug test. And it's just so well-filmed and well-shot, and there's it's just such a perfect recreation of the kind of stuff you would see on Breaking Bad that it's insane. And it's an amazing show. And there was another episode, I think the episode right after this was called BAN. And it was like a fake fake talk show where one of the characters went on, and it's just like a fictional talk. Like the entire episode is just an episode of that fictional talk show.
Wow.
And there would be like fake commercials in between the show as well too, and the commercials were hilarious. And it's just a really great show. And Glover has talked about the show as if he says one of the chief influences of the show is Twin Peaks. And now that I've seen all of Twin Peaks, I get it. Like, I totally understand where he's coming from there.
It's all coming together now.
Yeah. So that is Atlanta. It is fantastic. Probably the best new show of the year. It's just really great. Anyway, what is your number one TV show of the year, Mike?
My number one TV show is Stranger Things.
Ah,
I told you.
Man, that is upsetting. But you know what?
Yep.
You know what? You're gonna disagree with my number one pick too. So.
Not be Brooklyn Nine-Nine or some shit.
That was an honorable mention.
I mean, it's fine. I wouldn't be mad if you picked
that's
that.
That's a weird shade to Brooklyn Nine-Nine to throw around.
Yeah. Hot take.
Tell me what you liked about Stranger Things, Mike.
Oh, yeah, what didn't I like, Mike? That's the real question. This is a new show by the Duffer Brothers. I think it's their first show. But it checks all the boxes for me. It is a kind of 80s. I mean, it's just definitively 80s. Stephen King sci-fi horror weird things going on there. Check that box. We check the Dungeons and Dragons box within the first 5 minutes. It has a phenomenal performances by Winona Ryder, David Harbour. Millie Bobby Brown is awesome as Eleven.
Yes.
All the main cast of the kids, the group of friends. And it really, it pulls on the, you know, it evokes all those, the Goonies, Stand By Me. It evokes all those kind of coming of age stories from the 80s that are lots of fun to watch and be part of. And this does it with weird sci-fi monsters from the Upside Down. And like, what don't you like about that, Mike?
Right. I liked Stranger Things. I thought it was fine, but a lot of it felt like empty references and like empty nostalgia, and I just didn't feel like there was much there. But I know I'm in the minority on that opinion. Seems like everyone I know loves the fuck out of Stranger Things, and I'm glad that you liked it. You know, that's all I can say. My number one of the year is BoJack Horseman.
Oh man.
Season three of BoJack Horseman came out on Netflix this past year, and it was the show's best. This is the animated series It's an animated series that has such a specific focus that it feels like it was made just for me. You know,
that's what Stranger Things is for me, Mike.
Fair enough. But this is a Hollywood satire in which so much of the humor is derived from wordplay and puns, while it's also being a melancholy examination of life. And the show was a huge surprise for me back in season one. I remember watching it. I remember hearing when it first came out, and this was back when Netflix didn't have hundreds of shows, like hundreds of original shows. This was probably like Netflix's like one of its earliest shows, you know. And I remember seeing a commercial for it. Thing looked okay. I read a review for it that reviewed the first six episodes and said it was fine, whatever. And so I wasn't even gonna watch it. And then it was a couple days after the show premiered. I was hanging out in my living room. And one of my roommates just turned it on. Like, she was hanging out with her friend. She turned on BoJack Horseman. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll just hang out and watch BoJack Horseman. And I loved it from, minute one. I was really enjoying the show. I thought it was a very funny, enjoyable series. Like, it was just an enjoyable, pilot episode that set up a lot of really interesting things. And, it was just a very funny show. And then as season one went on, I just became so invested in what's happening. Right. And became so taken aback by how dark the show was willing to go and how... deep and insightful it can get. And I was so continually blown away by it. And it still does that for me now. Except now it goes so much harder. I kid you not. When I said this show, the show that affected me emotionally the most this year was the show about this talking stick on horse. The standout episode is episode 11, which is the second to last episode of the season three. And it's called That's Too Much Man. And it has... one of the most heartbreaking and devastating endings of any TV show I've ever seen. That includes that episode of Game of Thrones, the Hold the Door episode. It was heartbreaking. I was numb. I was numb after watching this episode.
Wow.
That was the amount of emotions that BoJack Horseman threw me through. And then it follows that up with there's a running gag throughout the season where there's a bunch of spaghetti strainers in Mr. Peanut Butter's house. Mr. Peanut Butter is the dog clip of Paul F. Tompkins.
Right.
There's a bunch of spaghetti strainers in his house, and everybody keeps asking, why do you have all these spaghetti strainers in his house? And he's like, you know, I forgot. I don't know why I have these. And then in the very last episode, after this entirely devastating and heartbreaking thing that you've just watched in the previous episode, the very last episode takes so many of the season's other plots, ties them all together, and builds them around these spaghetti strainers, and it builds it up just for this one fucking stupid pun.
That's amazing.
It is a season-long build-up to the dumbest pun I've ever heard, and it's amazing. And it's also and it also has shades of Mad Max Fury Road as well. I've been telling you for so long to start watching BoJack Horseman, and I really...
Yeah,
I really feel like you need to.
I don't know what it is. There's this. I've watched, I think, the first three episodes of the first season, and I just bounced off of them. I guess I need to just sit down and do it.
A lot of people have said that it takes them the first six episodes to get going. I was in for minute one, but a lot of people have said that they don't really like the first half of season one. So if that's the case, that might be the case for you. Who knows?
Maybe.
I do think episode six of season one has one of my favorite jokes in it, which is that's the episode where BoJack steals the D from the Hollywood sign. And actually,
that's what I made it up to. I made it up to the Hollywood episode.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So that one has one of my favorite jokes, where BoJack is trying to throw free money out on the ground, and he's throwing single dollar bills.
Yeah.
And Beyonce walks by and slips on the money. And the newscaster is reporting it, and is like, "Oh, it seems like Beyonce has fallen down on all the single dollars, all the single dollars, all the single dollars, all the single dollars."
God damn!
And I laughed so hard; it was great. But anyway, BoJack Horseman season three, one of the best seasons of TV, I think the best shows airing on TV right now. And here's the thing: 2016, there were quite a few of my favorite shows that did not return this year. Right. Fargo did not air a season this year. The Leftovers, which is almost a shoo-in for my top three of the year, did not make my list this year. It was not on this year. Rick and Morty did not air this year.
Shame. Yeah. Well, it was almost a pointless year of TV, if not for our six shows that we picked.
Exactly. And some honorable mentions, which I'll throw out right now. Obviously, Westworld was big. People vs. O.J. Simpson was a great show. That was really good.
That was one I missed out on too.
Yeah, that was a really good show. I think you should catch up on that. And also, I've heard I haven't watched this yet, but OJ Made in America, the documentary, is supposed to be incredible. There's been a huge debate over the past month or so between a lot of critics about whether it counts as a TV show or a film.
Really?
And it's 10 hours long.
Shit.
It was released in installments, but I guess the creator sees it as like one unified whole as a film. And so there's been a lot of debate about whether it counts. So if you no matter what list you go on, if you go onto any critic's top 10 list or whatever, OJ Made in America is on it, no matter if it's a TV list or a film list. but yeah, so that's supposed to be great. I haven't heard I haven't been able to watch that yet. But The People vs. O.J. Simpson was a great dramatization of that entire trial. Anyway, it's crazy that 2016 was the year of O.J. Simpson again.
When is it ever not the year of O.J.?
That's true. That's very true. So I wanted to mention that. Also, The Good Place, which is probably my number 4 of the year, and it might have made my top 3 if the season had finished yet. It's so frustrating. They aired the first. It's a 13 episode season. They've aired the first 9 episodes, and it's been off the air for 2 months.
What?
Yeah. So it's actually coming back this week. It's coming back on Thursday for 4 episodes, and then it's gone again.
They must not want it to succeed.
And
I don't get it.
I hope it succeeds. It's such a clever and funny show from the creator Parks and Rec. It's really, really great. Also, South Park this year was a blast, continuing the serialized narrative that it kind of struck in season 19, and also going a lot harder with the political stuff this year, and really did some really interesting stuff and kind of went a long way to explaining the success of Donald Trump in words I could understand. Also, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Last Man on Earth, two of the most reliable comedies of on TV right now. Veep, fantastic. Better Call Saul, which aired way back in February, so it's easy to forget about. But it also one of the best dramas on TV right now. And Comedy Bang Bang ended its run, man. See, Comedy Bang Bang's over now, and it was great. One of those shows that feels like it was made just for me, but really great show. And this past season, Weird Al Yankovic was the band leader, so that was a lot of fun. And the finale was great, and that was a really, really great stuff. So those are honorable mentions. Throw those out there. But anyway, BoJack Horseman's my number 1. Stranger Things is your number 1. I'm right, you're wrong, and we. But let's leave that behind. We'll put that in the past, Mike, because now it's time to look ahead to the year 2017.
Paper boy, always about that paper boy. If you ain't on your grind, then you flexing, you's a hater boy. Paper boy, always getting paper boy. If you ain't making money.
All right, Mike, it's time to look ahead to the year 2017, this weird dystopian future year that we find ourselves in. The world around us may be burning on fire, but there are a lot of movies to look forward to that are very exciting.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, I would say. So, I mean, I will throw this out there. I would imagine a lot of the stuff on here is blockbusters and not like the smaller stuff.
Yes.
If only because those are the movies that have release dates in 2017.
Yeah, the things we know are coming.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are, I know Paul Thomas Anderson's movie's coming out in 2017, or it's supposed to anyway, with Daniel Day-Lewis, the fashion industry one. And there will be other, auteur directors and smaller scale movies coming out in 2017. I think Spielberg's other new movies coming out in 2017, The Kidnapping of Edgardo Mortada. There will be other stuff there, but they don't have release dates, so we're really just focusing on what we know is coming out in 2017.
Yes.
And that will mostly be blockbusters for that. So let's get the obvious out of the way first. There is a new Star Wars movie coming out.
That's new Star Wars? Can't wait.
And this one is directed by Rian Johnson, which is fucking crazy. I mean, that's awesome. Director of Brick and Looper and select Breaking Bad episodes.
So many of my favorite things all at the same time.
Yeah.
When you put those Star Wars and Rian Johnson together.
Yes, that is awesome. Star Wars Episode 8 is going to have most of the cast of The Force Awakens, minus obviously Harrison Ford. And it will also be Carrie Fisher's last time as Princess Leia, so it'll probably be a pretty big deal.
I'm kind of interested to see how they handle that.
Yeah, from what I understand, she plays a lot... From what I understand, she plays a bigger role in this movie than she did in Episode 7, which is good. She doesn't even show up in Episode 7 until an hour and 45 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
It takes a while. But anyway, so that is obviously we're looking forward to Star Wars. And let's get the other obvious stuff out of the way. There's Marvel movies coming out.
We're in the 3 Marvel movie future, Mike.
Yep, this is the year. 3 Marvel movies a year. Now, technically, one of them is a Sony production, technically. But really, Marvel's got the reins here. They're the ones who are controlling things here. So, obviously, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is coming out. Spider-Man Homecoming is coming out, and Thor Ragnarok is coming out, and all of these are very promising. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, you got James Gunn back, just basically expanding what he did in Guardians of the Galaxy 1. The trailer for this looks fantastic.
Yeah, except now we get 80s pop music instead of 70s pop music.
Exactly. So that's really exciting. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, just really much looking forward to that. Spider-Man Homecoming, the first solo Spider-Man movie for Tom Holland. So that's pretty exciting as well. We'll see how he holds his own there. And obviously, like, Robert Downey Jr. is going to be in this movie. He's in the trailer as Tony Stark. I don't imagine he'll be in that much of it. But he is in the movie. And so is Jon Favreau as Happy Hogan, actually.
Really?
Which is kind of neat, yeah.
And that's exciting.
Yeah, very cool. And then also, I mean, that like it just looks... Like, basically, what I like that's being directed by John Watts, who directed the movie Cop Car, which was great. And this one looks like it's taking its cues from, like, John Hughes high school movies, which is, like, exactly yeah. what I want, you know?
That's what Spider-Man is. He's so much of that. Exactly. And it's exciting.
Yeah, so that's really cool. And just the trailer, it just feels like it's much more about the high school experience than any of the Spider-Man movies we've seen so far. And I love Sam Raimi Spider-Man. I love Sam Raimi Spider-Man. He is out of high school within the first half hour of Sam Raimi Spider-Man. Right.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if we get any Birdman jokes now that Michael Keaton's playing the Vulture.
Right. Yeah, so that's interesting as well. So that looks really exciting. And then there's Thor Ragnarok, which is, of course, being directed by Taika Waititi, who I am a big fan of. As I talked about, Hunt for the Wilder People was amazing. What We Do in the Shadows is amazing. And just the cast assemblage for this movie, it's going to have the Hulk and Doctor Strange in this movie. And it's got a cast that includes, like, Cate Blanchett and Jeff Goldblum. Like, what? What?
Yeah, it's gonna be super. And based just on that Team Thor short,
yes,
I have all the faith in the world.
So that is incredibly exciting, and I'm hoping for like just something really silly and really funny, and even if it's Ragnarok, which is supposedly the apocalypse, I'm hoping he can find the humor in it.
I'm sure there'll be a giant beam in the sky joke.
Oh, I'm sure. Anyway, so that's obviously the Star Wars and the Marvel stuff. We'll get that out of the way now. Let's talk about the movie that we're all really excited to talk about, Mike, which is, of course, The Fate of the Furious, motherfuckers. Oh, okay. Both, I mean. Both, sure. That's what I meant. John Wick Chapter 2.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Fate of the Furious first, because have you seen the trailer for Fate of the Furious?
I have, yes.
You have to understand my reaction when I watched the Fate of the Furious trailer, because I didn't just like watch it and say, oh, that's a very good trailer. I freaked the fuck out. I am shocked at myself for how invested I am in this franchise.
It's ridiculous.
And this is a franchise that for the first four movies I did not like very much. We did a whole Fast and Furious catch up before Furious 7 came out. Like I talked about my entire experience with the franchise. The first one's fine. I liked the first one; it was solid. 2 through 4 are like varying degrees of bad. Like they're, but everybody was so on board with Fast 5, I was like, I had to check it out, and I loved it. And then I loved Fast 6 and Furious 7. I think is one of the best action movies of the past few years. And so, The Fate of the Furious. This was directed by F. Gary Gray, who directed Straight Outta Compton. And based on that movie, I think he's going to do a great job here because he has this really keen cinematic eye. I mean, it's obviously there's no real action in Straight Outta Compton, but. You know, it's so interestingly directed. There's a lot of like sweeping camera movements and a lot of really cool stuff. And just based on the trailer, this movie is upping the ante.
Somehow.
And also, I mean, just the title alone, The Fate of the Furious. Fucking amazing title. I love it. But there's so much stuff in there's a scene in the trailer where a giant wrecking ball just like swings down the street and destroys like 10 cars at once. And then there's a scene where five different cars are like latched onto Dom's car, and then he flips them all around. And then there's a scene where they're in the Arctic for some reason, and a giant submarine breaks through the ice and chases them. It's insane.
Yeah.
And Dom is the bad guy now? Like what? Like what?
What?
Jason Statham's working with them now? Like what? So I'm very excited about The Fate of the Furious, and also to a lesser extent, I'm pretty excited about the new XXX movie.
You're just on the Vin Diesel train now.
I guess so. I've not seen either of the other XXX movies. I know he's not in one of them.
Yeah, one of them's Ice Cube.
One of them's
Ice
Cube.
Let that sink in.
Yeah, but that movie looks insane. Also, there's stuff in that trailer where he is riding a motorcycle on the ocean, and there's stuff where he is skiing in a forest. And,
It's the most ridiculous things of all time.
And here's the thing. I saw somebody tweet this, that Vin Diesel has three movies coming out this year, and the one where he plays a baby tree is the least ridiculous looking one.
Oh, my God. I never thought of that before.
And that is very true. So I'm very excited about Fate of the Furious. Kind of excited about Triple X. We'll see how the views turn out for that. But obviously you want to talk about John Wick, right? John Wick Chapter 2.
Yeah, John Wick Chapter 2. We both were huge fans of John Wick.
Absolutely, yeah. John Wick was one of the best action movies, along with Fury 7, and it's one of the best action movies of the past few years. And that's obviously a very different kind of action movie than the Fast and Furious. This is a very kind of stripped down...
Set on Earth movie.
Set on Earth. You know, but it's so much of it is about the choreography of its action, and you know, it's very the camera's always pulled back, so you always see what's going on, and there's a lot of really fun gunplay and gun fu and all that crazy stuff. And I went to the panel for John Wick Chapter 2 at Comic Con, and it was insane. It was awesome. Yeah. So the trailer
promises more of that. We get Lawrence Fishburne is in it.
Yeah. So we can, Matrix reunion.
Yeah, we can only hope that it's revealed that John Wick is a training program for Neo. That'd be crazy.
Yeah, but I think what's also kind of exciting about this, I imagine it will expand upon a lot of the stuff we saw in John Wick, and there was such an interesting underworld criminal community, hitman community that movie built. And so I'm hoping Chapter 2 will expand and you'll get to see more of that, because that was arguably the best part of John Wick is the world building. Right. The best part of John Wick is the action sequences, but under that, it's the world. It's the world building and the interesting world that it creates.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever the name of that hotel is, I can't remember that they all stay at. The Continental, right? That whole idea that there's just a hitman hotel and crazy. Hopefully, we get a lot more of that, and I'm sure we will.
Yeah, hopefully. Also, Hugh Jackman's going to be doing his last round as Wolverine in Logan, which comes out in March.
Yeah.
So that's pretty soon, actually. That's coming up. And the trailer for that looks fantastic. I think this one's directed by James Mangold, who directed The Wolverine, which I think is a very underrated Wolverine movie. It's a really, really good one. And that movie kind of took a lot of its influences from samurai films, and this one looks like it's taking a lot of its influences from westerns. So I'm pretty excited about this, and I think Hugh Jackman has been very protective of this character. Hugh Jackman has been playing Wolverine for 17 years.
Holy shit.
That's insane. 17 years across, 9 movies, I think, including this one. That's more than Roger Moore played James Bond, that's... it's kind of nuts. So I'm pretty excited about that. And the trailer set to Johnny Cash's version of Hurt is just really evocative, and it looks a lot like The Last of Us.
Man, this movie gives us anything. I hope it's a Last of Us movie.
Yeah. But, it's... part of what I think has been interesting about Deadpool's success, Deadpool was obviously rated R.
Right.
I was just thinking about this. I'm surprised Deadpool didn't make your top 10.
Almost did. It came close.
Yeah. Okay.
It came close.
But Deadpool.
But then I watched. But then I watched Green Room last night, and I was like, okay, I can put that on there.
So Deadpool was rated R, and it became a huge success. And I think we're gonna see a lot of fallback from that. And we're going to see some movies that take that success the wrong way and just try to add dick jokes and whatever to the movie.
Right.
But I was reading about this because Denis Villeneuve was talking about Blade Runner 2049, which is going to be rated R. And the reason it's rated R is because Deadpool was so successful that they figured they want to take a chance and let it happen. And Logan's also going to be rated R, and that's for the same reason. And also Alien Covenant is going to be rated R. And these are, the case of Blade Runner and Alien, those are traditionally R-rated franchises. Blade Runner wasn't a franchise before, it now is. but those are traditionally R-rated. And I think Prometheus was PG-13, I think. I'm pretty sure it went down to PG-13. And Logan, Wolverine's a character who people have been asking for a rated R movie for a long time. It's a character who, can support that kind of thing. There are very few comic book characters I think can support a rated R movie, and I think Wolverine is one of them, so... I'm pretty stoked about all of those. I think Logan, Alien Covenant, and Blade Runner 2049 could present a new age in adult programming at the movie theater, which is a very, very cool. I'm very excited about all of those. I think, of those, Mike, Ridley Scott's coming back for Alien Covenant, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped for all those things. I haven't seen... Is there a trailer for Alien Covenant? I think it just came out recently.
There is. I have not watched it.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but I remember seeing a lot of hype for it. Yeah. So that's exciting.
So, I mean, he also directed Prometheus, which is a movie that I liked a lot more than people other people did. But I had not seen it since it was in theaters. And I would like to watch it again before Alien Covenant comes out. But I know Michael Fassbender is back as the Android David. I don't think anybody else from that movie is back, but also most of them are dead.
Yeah, I remember really liking Prometheus when I saw it in theaters. I've seen it once since then, and I don't remember. I think it might have come down on a little bit, but I definitely need to watch it again and check it out. But I'm excited to see, because that's less of a horror movie. That's Prometheus. It's right. More of a sci-fi thing.
More of a sci-fi stuff, yeah.
So I'm kind of interested to see some new Ridley Scott alien horror.
Right, if it's in the same vein, yeah.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, that's Alien Covenant. And Blade Runner, I mean, like, the return of Harrison Ford as Rick Deckard. You know, he's cycling through all of his old movies.
I guess so.
Yeah, Why not? He did Star Wars. He's going to be doing Indiana Jones again. Might as well. Just go through all of them. Witness 2, Air Force 2.
Oh, man, Air Force 2 is such a good pun.
Like, it's such a good pun. It's amazing they haven't done it yet, you know?
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I don't think it's possible for the president to be the vice president after he was president.
But who cares?
If anyone could, it's Harrison Ford. So yeah, Blade Runner 2049 also looks very good. I mean, Denis Villeneuve, like, Arrival was great. Sicario was very good. And also starring Ryan Gosling, who is the man.
Our new boy, apparently.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Also, I mean, if we want to take the piss out of all that stuff, the Lego Batman movie is coming out in February, which looks infinitely more appealing than the current Batman that we have right now.
Yes, indeed.
Have you seen the trailers for Lego Batman movie?
I have, yeah. Yeah, I'm pumped.
I laugh every time. There's the one, like, recurring joke in the trailer where Michael Cera as Robin finds his costume and is like, "Oh, these pants are a little tight." I know. Rip, and he rips his pants off and it hits Batman in the face, and I laugh every single time. I really enjoy it. And I mean, I love Zach Galifianakis playing the Joker. Right. It's just so much, like, fun casting for this. And I mean, the Lego movie was obviously fantastic. Like, it was much better than anyone ever expected it to be. And obviously, like, Phil Lord and Chris Miller are not a part of this, but I think this is directed by Chris McKay, who co-directed the Lego movie. And as long as Will Arnett is playing Batman, I think there's going to be something good here. So
yeah,
that is very cool. But speaking of DC stuff, Wonder Woman and Justice League are both coming out.
That's right.
This year. And I have no reason to trust DC anymore. They have squandered all my goodwill, but that said, Wonder Woman does look pretty good.
Yeah, that's the one I'm pulling for, at least.
And I have not seen the trailer for Justice League, which I know has like a 3-minute trailer from Comic-Con or something.
That's too many minutes. Nobody needs. That's way too many.
Yeah. So there's Wonder Woman and Justice League, and Justice League is being directed by Zack Snyder again. So I don't know. I hate that I will probably end up seeing it.
Yeah,
you know,
tragic.
We'll probably end up reviewing it, and that's some of our best reviews. Is the one where we're just ripping on DC movies at this point
for like an hour and a half every time.
Our Suicide Squad review is the stuff of legend. But Wonder Woman, I'm pulling out. I'm pulling for. I really want Wonder Woman to be good. And you know, Gal Gadot. Like, a lot of people thought she was a highlight of Batman for Superman. I don't think she really got the chance to shine in that movie because she's barely in it and she barely talks when she's there. You know, as far as Wonder Woman goes, like, the theme for Wonder Woman was the star of that movie for me, which was, like, you know, the Mad Max Fury Road-esque, you know, drums beating and stuff. But, yes, there's Wonder Woman. You know, I hope it's good. I hope it's good.
Exactly.
I really want DC movies to be good again. You hear Ben Affleck is trying to, like, is starting to distance himself from the Batman. Like,
what? No, I have not heard this.
Yeah, I mean, they delayed the sequel to Justice League. Justice League 2 is supposed to come out in 2019. And I think they delayed it to give Ben Affleck time to work on The Batman, which is supposed to come out either in 2018 or 2019. Right. And recently he's been saying, like, you know, the script isn't really in a place where I want it to be and all that kind of stuff. And, like, who knows, like, what'll happen. And, like, it seems like he's already trying to distance himself from the role and from that movie. And I can't really blame him, because I wouldn't want to spend the rest of my life being told that I liked the Lego version of me better.
That's 100% correct. I don't blame him at all.
Yeah. So there's that, at least. But then also, one of the most exciting blockbuster series is back in 2017. Planet of the Apes has a new movie out, War for the Planet of the Apes. And it looks incredible. It looks awesome. And Woody Harrelson's in this one, which is a lot of fun. I don't know if you heard, Woody Harrelson is being eyed for a role in the Han Solo Star Wars movie as well.
I guess I did hear about that.
As Han Solo's mentor, which is interesting. Pretty wild. Can you imagine watching Cheers back in the early 90s and being like, that guy, the dim-witted bartender, is going to be a part of every blockbuster franchise in the 2010s?
Insane. I mean, but would you think that watching Cheers that we're gonna have all these movies back again? Like, I went to see Rogue One with my dad, my parents, and we see the trailer for War for Planet of the Apes before Rogue One, and my dad leans over to me and goes, 40 years ago, I didn't think I'd ever be seeing a trailer for a new Planet of the Apes movie before a Star Wars movie. Before a new Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Everything's cyclical.
Exactly. Time is a flat circle.
Exactly. Back to Woody Harrelson project. but yeah, this movie looks awesome. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was incredible. So I'm very excited for War for the Planet of the Apes. And it's from the same director, Matt Reeves. So really looking forward to this. It's going to be really, I think it's going to be really good. And then also Christopher Nolan's new movie comes out this year. Dunkirk, the new World War II movie. And I'm very excited about this because Nolan's a director who I love. I think he's one of the best directors working today. And I loved Interstellar, even though that movie's a little divisive. Some people hate on Interstellar, and I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't understand the hatred for Interstellar.
They're small brains.
Exactly. They can't conceive of the genius. there is that. Dunkirk is a movie that I've been really looking forward to for a long time. And I'm excited to see what Nolan can do with the World War II setting. Yeah. It's almost like a rite of passage at this point, where every major director has to have a World War II movie under his belt.
Yeah. I think it will be interesting, too, to see a World War II movie not focused on American soldiers.
Yeah, that's true.
It's about British and French.
Yeah, that's very...
just be an interesting take on it.
Yeah, in terms of American cinema, that's kind of rare.
Yeah,
exactly. That is pretty cool. Also, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Fucking would.
you're not looking forward to Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets?
I did see I have seen the trailer for it once, and it looks crazy, and it reminded me of Jupiter Ascending, and I was like, Mike's gonna love this.
Yeah, this is the new movie from Luc Besson, who's the director of The Professional and The Fifth Element and Lucy most recently. It looks bonkers. It looks totally insane. It could turn into a Jupiter Ascending very easily, I think, and that movie was pretty rough, but Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, I think, has a lot of potential, so definitely look out for that.
At the same time, I kind of want to see it.
I think it looks like a lot of fun. Baby Driver is out this year, the new Edgar Wright movie.
Oh, really? That's coming out.
Yeah, okay. In August, I believe. So that's very exciting. Really looking forward to Baby Driver. I think that's going to be a really, really cool kind of different thing for Edgar Wright, because usually he does comedies. And this is more of like an action thriller. I don't think he can not be funny. So
yeah. At World's End is like... kind of also an action thriller. I mean, all those, but the Carnetto Trilogy is kind of all action thrillers.
Yes, I mean, the great thing about those is that they're comedies, but they also work as an example of the genre that they're doing. So, like, Shaun of the Dead works as a horror movie, Hot Fuzz works as an action movie, and The World's End works as a sci-fi movie. And Baby Driver looks like it's going to be an action thriller about this dude played by, I want to say, Nicholas Hoult, although I think I'm wrong on that. But somebody like Nicholas Hoult. Yeah.
Sure.
And
so Jai Courtney.
What?
Generic white guy.
That is not what I was going for there. But anyway. Yeah. And he's like a getaway driver, and it's supposed to be like very much like built around the soundtrack. The soundtrack kind of the movie's like edited to the soundtrack, and it's supposed to be really cool, and Jon Hamm is in it, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Also, Kingsman 2 is out this year. The Golden Circle.
Beautiful.
So that's pretty cool. And also directed by Matthew Vaughn, so I'm pretty excited about that. Yeah. Steven Soderbergh's new movie, Logan Lucky, is coming out with Daniel Craig, I believe, is in. And this is his first movie in 4 years after his retirement, quote-unquote.
Right.
Quote-unquote retirement. So that's cool. And then there's God Particle, which is the bad robot movie that may or may not be a Cloverfield thing.
I kind of really hope it is. That'd be so cool.
That would be neat. But
They just drop that 2 months in advance again, that'd be awesome.
Yes, so that is pretty cool. Are there any other movies you can think of, Mike, that you're looking forward to?
There's not a movie, but there is a TV show.
Okay.
We're getting season 3 of Twin Peaks comes out 2017.
Fuck yeah, we are.
Yeah, yeah. This is the first thing I wrote down. Oh, okay, second. Shrek 5 was first, but you already made that joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's everything is happening again. Your gum, that gum you like, will come back in style, yes. And it's fucking, we're here.
Yep, I recently finished Twin Peaks, and I watched Firewalk with Me.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I watched it the other day, and have you seen Firewalk with Me yet?
I haven't finished it. I watched like the first 20 minutes, and then I was like, I'm not ready for this.
it is not what I expected. It's really, really good, but yeah. It is not what I expected at all. What I had heard about it was that it was like a prequel / sequel.
Yeah.
But it turns out it's pretty much just a straight prequel. Like I think the very, very like last shot seems like it's kind of indicative of like right after the show, but and it's kind of amazing. The first half hour of the movie, only one character from the show is in that first half hour, and it's David Lynch as Gordon Cole.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And
I just remember like it's putting it on, and we're watching this woman like tap dance a secret message, and I was like, I'm not fucking ready. I can't do this.
But yeah, and then after that, like there's a bit with like Cooper, and there's like a really short bit with David Bowie as well, and then the rest of the movie is just like the final days of Laura Palmer, right. And it's really interesting, especially because I mean I actually read The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer. I finished it shortly before I watched the movie, and it's really interesting to see that character alive seeing how that character like interacted with people and like seeing because throughout the show she's only ever dead. You only ever see her as a corpse or in weird visions. And so that is cool. But yeah, Twin Peaks season 3, man.
I love how deeply you've gone into Twin Peaks now. It's so good.
I have dived all in. I watched the show. I watched the movie. I read The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer. And I just got The Secret History of Twin Peaks, the book that Mark Frost wrote.
Yes.
So pretty excited to dive into that as well.
Yeah. Stay tuned for maybe do podcast. Who knows?
Yeah, we've thrown around the idea of doing a Twin Peaks podcast for the new season. And I think that is definitely something that we could do if we have time. Because
yeah.
I think we have the ability to talk about Twin Peaks for a for a lengthy amount of time.
Correct.
But are there any other shows that you are looking forward to, Mike? I mean, there's Legion. I don't know if you're excited about Legion.
I think I've just heard of that show. I don't think I've seen anything about it. Yeah,
it's the new show on FX. It's based in the X-Men universe.
Oh yes, yeah, Legion and Taboo is another one that I'm interested in checking out. New FX show.
Yeah, with Tom Hardy.
Yeah,
but Legion is created by Noah Hawley, the creator of Fargo.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's like this character from the X-Men comics that's the son of Charles Xavier, and it's like him discovering his powers and stuff, and it's got a crazy cast. It's got Dan Stevens from The Guest, and Aubrey Plaza is in the cast of the show, and just looks really cool, and like I'm pretty stoked for that. And then yeah, Taboo with Tom Hardy, he plays like somebody, I think he comes back from war or something, or he was believed to be dead in the 1800s, and he comes back and tries to take revenge on somebody. It looks cool.
Yeah, looks weird. I'm in.
Definitely.
Ridley Scott's involved somewhere, so like sure
why not. And then Fargo season 3 is gonna be coming back this year, which is cool. And also The Leftover season 3
nice.
Is coming back in April, I think. So that's to look forward to as well. Is The Young Pope, excited for The Young Pope?
Kind of. I've been seeing a lot of hate for it, and I don't really know why, but
I've heard it's really great.
Okay,
Young Dumb and Full of Pope.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean, like all that, like the weird, I don't know, like I haven't been following anything about it.
I think it's a fun show to make jokes about. I don't know, because it just seems like if you watch trailers for it, it looks like the fake trailer from Tropic Thunder where Robert Downey Jr. plays the gay religious guy.
It does, yeah.
Satan's Alley.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've heard it's really great. It's got Jude Law and Diane Keaton, I think.
Diane Keaton, yeah. I'm interested. I'm ready for it. I want to check it out.
Yeah, so there's that. And then, I mean, Game of Thrones will eventually come back this year, I think, for its second-to-last season, shortened second-to-last season.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of pumped for that. I'm interested in that they're doing it later because they want – it's winter in the show, so they wanted to actually film it during winter. So right. they pushed the show back.
Yes.
So as sad as I am that we're not going to get our March, April premiere normally, I'm ready for – now that Game of Thrones season 6 happened and we fucking are finally – done jerking off for 3 seasons of not doing anything and the story's happening, I'm ready for it to end.
Absolutely.
In the awesome way.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited to see where that show goes. And I mean, there's Veep and Silicon Valley are going to be coming back. Basically, anything on HBO, we're all in on those.
We're in.
HBO and FX. This episode is sponsored to you by by HBO and FX.
And Marvel, apparently.
And Marvel. And I guess both of our number one shows of the year were Netflix shows.
We're Netflix picks, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I didn't think of that. I didn't realize that.
Netflix has stepped up its game, man. They have a show for everyone now.
They do.
Like, it's literally every single person in the world has a show specifically designed for them. Because Netflix comes out with a new show every minute.
Yeah, there's 8 billion shows on Netflix.
So, like, you get Stranger Things, I get BoJack Horseman, and somebody else gets Dave's show, or whatever, you know? but, yeah, so that's some of the TV that's coming out this year. Obviously, I think Twin Peaks is the big one, though.
Yeah.
That's the one that I feel like everybody is, like, really looking towards. It's like, I mean, we didn't even mention this. David Lynch is directing every episode of that season.
Oh, fucking...
And he hasn't directed any movie or TV show or anything in 11 years.
What?
Yeah. So wow. The last thing he did was Inland Empire back in 2006. Yeah. So that's very, very exciting. I'm very stoked for new content from David Lynch himself.
And it's Twin Peaks. Like,
Twin Peaks. And also, everything's great. Also, one of the crazy things is that in the finale of Twin Peaks, Laura Palmer says, "I'll see you again in 25 years." And now it's 26 years. It's 26 years since the finale ended. But originally, this was supposed to come out this season was supposed to air in 2016.
Yeah, it was supposed to be. I think it was almost going to be 26 years to the day, or 25 years to the day.
Yeah, which
like the original plan.
That would have been insane. and I mean, and like I'm glad they're taking the time with it and they want to make a good thing. So I don't really care that they missed that date, but like,
right.
It's still like they hit it in the ballpark though. Like, they
yeah, it's still pretty close.
So that is pretty cool. So yeah, Twin Peaks. Looking forward to it. Going to be better than every movie in 2017.
Like, probably, though.
it's quite possible. Anyway, Mike, where can we find you online this week? Now it's right
now. You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to Film Bookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike DiCriscio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. If you want to donate to our Patreon campaign, go to patreon.com/filmbook for all of your Patreon campaign-related needs. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks when we'll hopefully be discussing Martin Scorsese's Silence, which made your top 10 list.
Yes.
And I have not gotten to see yet because I live in this weird hick town. but hopefully in 2 weeks it'll be playing. I can go check it out. And you can check out our next Complete Works, where we'll be talking Nicolas Cage's role in Brian De Palma's Snake Eyes, which is kind of exciting as well. Right, Mike?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be interested to see him in more weird action things.
Well, it's more like a weird psychological thriller thing.
That's true.
That'll be cool. I'm looking forward to that. So thank you guys so much for listening. We are out.